From the broken ruins of Babylon, this is End of Days Radio. I'm your host, Daniel, broadcasting from the Shimmering Emerald City. You know what's nice? Now that we have some new intro music, it actually does the broken ruins part for me. So I might just kind of drop that. I'm okay with it. Today's date, however, is June 13th in the year of our Lord 2026. And today is going to be a little bit of a different show. We don't have a guest today. It's going to be a commentary on society, commentary on pop culture, commentary on life, a commentary on everything. And joining us will be today's co-host. Remember, we're not going to bring 50 billion people on the show anymore. We're going to just kind of have a revolving door of guests and co-hosts and stuff like that. Keep things from getting too crazy. Let's go ahead and bring on our buddy, Dr. Robert. Are you there?
I'm here. What's going on? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You sound great.
Hey, Groovy, man. It's good seeing you. Like I said, man, you look good.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been not working out, so I've gained a little weight. But, hey, it's all good.
Yeah. I can dig it, man. I'd rather be fat and full than skinny and starving.
Yeah, some of these people on that Ozempic are going a little too far with that shit. Like that poor Kelly Osbourne. Boy, she looks like a skeleton.
I haven't seen her, man, really?
Oh, yeah, she looks bad.
Oh, wow. I remember she had lost some weight at first, man. She looked pretty good. She looked pretty damn good.
Yeah, I thought she always looked fine. I mean, you know, she's maybe a tiny bit chubby when they first started doing that. What was it called? Osbourne's something?
Yeah, I used to like that show, low-key.
Really?
I used to watch the show all the time, man. I should just trip off the way Ozzy Osbourne talk. That should just make me laugh. You remember that show? It was a movie with Brad Pitt where he was like that Irish like knockout artist, but you couldn't understand awesome the word movie. He was saying.
Yeah, that's a great. That's called.
It's on the tip of your tongue, up.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's such a good movie. But yeah, he's an Irish gypsy. And he gets involved with some mobsters, and not only is the whole movie badass, but I'm not going to spoil it. The ending, holy shit. Snatch.
Snatch, that's it, yeah, that shit was hard.
Oh, yeah, that's
good. Doesn't Ozzy Osbourne talk like Brad Pitt's character?
Kind of. I love the beginning where that big guy is just like beating the shit out of him, throwing him against the wall. He just gets up and starts doing exercises.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. That's
gets crazy, up and man. Just kills him in one punch or knocks him out.
It's some motherfuckers like that, though.
Yes.
There is like just weird fucking energy and a weird fucking will. Just born with it.
Yeah. There's been MMA fighters and boxers, guys like that. You just punch.
I got a homeboy named Ronnie from the street. I grew up in the hood. No essay, but he hung with the brothers, man. And that motherfucker, man, he was just a fighting, crazy ass. Ride his bike. I mean, like far distances, super fast. All see this motherfucker riding up hills and hiking, and I mean, just nonstop, like just straight adrenaline junkie. But man, that motherfucker, man, he like his mindset, he was just an unstoppable motherfucker, man. I used to see him just like beat the shit out of motherfuckers, man, being there laughing like a motherfucker, man, because he's kind of like a small guy too. But he just has like this crazy will this strange self-belief, man, and it's just natural. Like, what he has, you can't teach. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, you can't teach art.
Yeah.
You can teach the skill, you can teach all that stuff, but the dude that keeps getting back up, that's something special that you gotta be born with or maybe learn through just having a brutal life.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
On that subject, did you watch any of that Jake Paul stuff going on?
Yeah. I like the fact he got his jaw broke, man.
Yeah, not just broke, but like broken a million pieces.
Yeah. And the reason why, because he was making a mockery of boxing, that's why.
Yeah, that's what
What was his
opponent, Anthony Johnson?
Joshua.
Anthony.
Yeah, now you good.
He was like, I'm gonna go in there and I'm gonna do it for boxing. I'm gonna get him out of here.
Yeah. Plus he was talking big shit, man. Like big shit to that man.
Plus what he did with Mike Tyson, that pissed off the boxing world. Mike Tyson is like everybody's idol.
Yeah, that you know, I was for sure Mike Tyson was gonna go in there and give him a boxing lesson, educate him. But I guess I was wrong on that.
I think that was a fixed fight, definitely.
I know it was fixed. That's why I'm like, I was wrong on that. Like I thought Tyson was going there as Tyson. You know, the original Tyson, the man who threw everything with bad intentions.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, that's what he was known for. He used to say that a lot, too. I threw everything with bad intentions. You know, you know, that was his word.
Yeah, exactly. He always brought it. That's why he has so many fans. Because if you order the pay-per-view, you know you would see you'd see a knockout. You would see Mike Tyson brutally beat the shit out of his opponent.
Yeah. Yeah, if you like a person who thrives off blood like the UFC crowd does and knockouts, he was that kind of fighter.
Yeah. And did you watch the next one after that? Did you watch the Ronda Rousey Gina Carano spectacle?
I heard it was like, you know what? I mean, I saw it on, I guess, like maybe like on Instagram or TikTok, but it was real short, right? Like in a matter of seconds.
Real short.
Yeah.
She just took her down. Got on top of her and armbarred her, and it was over in like less than 30 seconds.
But if you saw her boxing, like when she was like, you know, like on camera and she was doing a warm out and a workout and she was hitting the hand packs, her boxing is horrendous. I see why she did that. Because her stand up game sucks.
Well, I'm not sure if you're like aware of her career, but that was kind of her story. She was this judo champ, and she hooked up with a trainer that got her convinced that her hands were like Floyd Mayweather level. So she gets in the ring with Holly Holm, and Holly Holm just, you know, schools her in the stand up and destroys her entire reality. And a lot of people blame that trainer for making her head too big and convincing her she had good hands when she's a beginner, realistically.
That's interesting that you say that, man, because that's important, man. You need somebody who's going to be brutally honest with you, especially in the fight game, because you can get killed.
Yeah, it's not easy being a fighter. It's not easy being a trainer either. You have to tell people stuff they don't want to hear, and you got to listen to your trainer too. Like a lot of these guys, you know, they go in there and they just get stubborn. They don't listen to their coach or trainer and lose fights. That's why that whole Greg Jackson racket has been so successful, because they have excellent game plans, and if a guy needs to take another guy down and dry hump him for 3 rounds or 5 rounds, you know, they'll go ahead and do it. That's why so many champs come from that camp, but they're hated because they put on boring fights.
Yeah. I'm not really a fan of just watching jiu-jitsu by itself.
Sure. I don't think anybody is.
Yeah. No, it's a serious martial arts. Like it'll save you. But I mean, like, it's boring to watch.
Yeah. It's, something that it's like a freestyle or amateur wrestling. The only people that are going to watch it are the people that do it.
Yeah. You have to have a very tactical mind. Like, you have to be able to like really understand why they're doing those moves too.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like maybe at the highest levels, just like so you know who the best guy in the world is. But you got a lot of stalling and boring. People want to see fist fights, really. They don't want to see grappling.
Yeah, not at all. Like
that. Yeah. That's why MMA wasn't even popular at first. It was like a fringe niche type of thing. You know, guys would get some buddies in their garage and they'd watch a VHS tape of those early UFC fights. But it actually became popular when they started standing up the fighters and also fighting more in a ring. Because once they did that, you had much more exciting fights and the strikers were able to do their magic and you'd see knockouts. Like Chuck Liddell, he was one of the first guys to actually start knocking people out.
He's got weird knockouts too, man. They just came from nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably because he's not a boxer. He's actually a karate guy, so his style is a little bit unconventional. Even for a karate guy, his style is kind of unconventional. He's like a good college wrestler with good hands. But
that's the way it should be. It should be authentic, man, because, like, the martial arts, the way I understand it, it's supposed to just, like, give you, the raw movements, right? But that's why they call it an art. You're an artist, you know, because basically, like, a kick is a kick and a punch is a punch, right? Even Bruce Lee says that, right? But it's up to you to get creative with those things, right?
Yeah.
You know, so like a real, like, master. And you see that the Jedi, it's the same concept, man, everywhere else. Like, the Jedi do, like, the Jedi story does it real well, where, like, you get to construct your own lightsaber. Like, your master kind of, like gives you the arcs, gives you the basics. And then your job as a student, if you're a good student or a great student, right, you're supposed to be able to take it to the next level, right? Like, turn what he gave you and can create an entirely different, you know, style out of it, right?
Yeah.
I give you an example, man. I give you a perfect example of that in a book. You ever read The River Runs Through It? You seen the movie with Brad Pitt?
I think I may have read the book when I was a kid. It sounds very familiar.
Well, there's an interesting part there, and then I'll let you take the stage. Like, his father was like a fan of fly fishing, basically. So he would always take his sons and teach them how to fly fish. You know, they live kind of like in Alaska, somewhere where you kind of did those types. I know what state it was, basically, right? But there's a scene in there, right, where the narrator, the brother, talking to Brad Pitt about his brother, where he notices that his brother breaks from his father's style, right? And he's talking about how beautiful it is, how his brother kind of created like his own style. You know, and he breaks from his father's rhythm and he starts stepping away from his father, right? And the brother's describing how beautiful it is. And he later talks to his brother and his brother gave it a name. And he said, I forgot what he called it, but it was just beautiful, man, because that's what you're supposed to do. That's authenticity. Authenticity doesn't mimic, right? Authenticity is a product of what the Japanese call wu wei, or emergent nature, right? Like your true nature just erupting forward out of you. And that goes back to the real meaning of the word education. Comes from the Greek Latin word educare, which means to bring out that which you already have, right? Your true nature, your true essence, your reason for being, that gift that the universe has instilled in you to share with mankind. But you can't get that if you're mimicking people and you're scared to be yourself.
Yeah, that's very true, very true. I think that a lot of times we mimic people that are our heroes and things like that, but even like jiu-jitsu, that comes from Japan, but the Brazilians, they took it in its own direction and refined what was already there and kind of made it their own. And some people have even taken like the Brazilian jiu-jitsu and turned it into something else. And martial arts is kind of like that, because it's funny because for a while it's like they got everybody convinced that it was all about the ground game and taking people down. You know, then the striking kind of came back and we realized, hey, okay, so this whole idea of, you know, every fight goes to the ground, it wasn't really true. And you can even see on YouTube, like a lot of these fist fights people get into, they're just like sloppy boxing matches until somebody gets tired or gets pushed into the street or their buddies break it up or some kind of knockout happens. But it's just one example of, you know, misconceptions or outright lies or propaganda rhetoric that we can sometimes base our whole lives around, but actually we're not even true in the first place.
I agree with that. You know what? I have an interesting theory on that too. The jiu-jitsu thing, basically, I just think people adapted to it. Like at one point it was new and foreign, like people didn't really understand it. And then the more you interact with it, you start noticing certain weaknesses. Like the more you interact with something and the more you take the time to study something, you can start detecting little weaknesses or little loopholes in its design. And I think that's what happened basically. Like a lot of stand-up fighters figured out how not to allow jiu-jitsu people to even take them to the ground, right? How to keep them off balance, right? So, I mean, it just depends. I think at first it was just so foreign that people weren't really aware of it, that it caught a lot of people by surprise, right? But surprise only lasts for how long, right?
You can't surprise people when it's all over TV and the internet and you go on YouTube and rewatch the videos and it's all out there.
Because what happens when you meet a real authentic person, right? He's going to start watching as many jiu-jitsu videos as possible, right? But for the purpose of what? Figuring how to defeat it. And I think that's what happened with a lot of fighters, basically. The more they got used to it, the more you start seeing more videos, the more you start seeing more examples of it, then you start determining, well, how can I beat this? How can I neutralize a takedown? You know, how can I neutralize somebody who gets me in an arm lock or something like that? You know what I mean? How can I counter it being a stand-up fighter? That's what happens. That's when you're dealing with an intelligent fighter versus a fighter who's just going off instinct.
Yeah, that's very true. In fact, that gets into the idea of secrecy in a lot of martial arts. They, you know, going back to what you were talking about earlier, they would only transfer certain skills and knowledge through their own bloodlines. That's why, like in ancient Japan, you had styles named after the families that were, you know, developing and refining them. And sometimes they'd have, you know, people from their local area that were part of their dojo or part of their clan. They would also share in a lot of those secrets. And even the Gracies, they were kind of like that for a little while, I believe. And some of their students actually kind of turned against them and took things in their own direction. And it turned into a rivalry of sorts. And I think they were called the Valley Tudo guys. And they kind of broke off and they got in some pretty nasty fights and stuff like that just from having a rivalry. And that's why, you know, that's the motivation to keep things secret when you're developing a martial art.
Yeah, I mean, that what you said is just natural. You see, we've talked about this before, like when we used to talk on your show about how, like, whenever you have any type of movement, eventually you'll start seeing splinter groups.
Mm-hmm.
And a huge reason for that is because inside those organizations, like at one point, like you meet certain people and you idolize them at first, right?
Sure.
And you start seeing them, you know, they can do no wrong. They're these great people. But what will, you know, there's this old saying that familiarity breeds contempt. So the more you start being around them, you start seeing all the ways they fuck up, you know, because you can't maintain that mask forever, right? And inside those organizations, people start getting disillusioned and they start noticing that the leaders in those organizations aren't really true or aren't really practicing what they preach or, you know, there are certain things they're keeping from the public and not telling them to maintain their image and shit like that. And over time, man, that'll make people leave your group and create something new.
Yeah, yeah. You've seen that in a lot of different areas. And religion has got to be probably the main one. I mean, you know, you had the church, which was the main church, the Catholic Church, and then it turned into the Lutherans and the Baptists and the Protestants and now there's so many, we probably wouldn't even be able to name.
You know, another reason why that is, too, is because human language is so disloyal. Like, once people get access to the actual text and get to reading it, like, they're going to interpret it based on their own experience or their own understanding. And that's how, and then when those convictions get strong, that's when you get people start to question leadership. And when leadership starts getting questioned, that's when you start seeing people create new doctrines.
Sure. Yeah. And a lot of it has to do with secrecy, too. When the church goes in and covers certain things up, you got people asking questions like, well, we want to preach that covered up information or we want to know more about it. What are you hiding from us? And can we trust any organization that just takes our money and lords over us? What happened to the grassroots thing? What happened to the guy preaching outside on the hill?
And that's really what the disciples were bought. You know, like when you go back to like, You know, because like Christianity isn't really Christianity, right? That's what the enemies of Christians call Christians, you know, followers of Christ, right? But what they call themselves, and it's funny too, because some say like Christ maybe was Lao Tzu, but originally like the true Christians, those heirs, they refer to their practice as the way.
Yeah, I think actually that's what people have told me Yahweh means. It means the way.
I could be that, you know, because that's what Christ says, right? I'm the way, the truth, and the life, right?
Mm-hmm. I've been actually getting really into this stuff lately. I've kind of
Hold on 1 second, Danny.
Yeah, no worries. He's got to deal with something going on in the background, but I mean, as many of you guys know, I've been getting really into the Bible lately, and if you read it, you realize. Things aren't always like you thought they were. I mean, I had the experience of growing up, you know, semi-religious and was told a lot of different things. But when you actually read the Bible firsthand, it's like, whoa, okay, this is extremely weird, or this wasn't exactly how I was taught. Like,
oh, most definitely. I'm back. I'm sorry. Most definitely.
Well, one of the most major ones would have to be the idea of, you know, in one of the books of the Bible, after Christ comes back, he actually orders the people that went against him to be killed. And I brought that up before, but a lot of people still push back on me on it, even though it's in the Bible. You can look it up on Google in 2 seconds.
I believe that. There's a lot, and you know, like those, those Gnostic Gospels too, because I had a chance to read some of those. Because they have like, you know, because like, there's a story in there about Christ when he was a kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
That like he killed a child with his abilities.
Oh, I think I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like the child did something to upset him or something. Like, you gotta think, man. It's like that little kid from the Twilight Zone, you know, Anthony. You know, you better stop thinking bad thoughts about me. You know what I'm saying?
who wouldn't want that power?
But you know, but that's basically, you know, you got a kid like Christ, right? Who's actually God, right? That's what he has.
Yeah. This, he has too much power.
He can read your mind, and then it's a human kid too.
Yeah,
that's a recipe for disaster. Cause you really, and that's why the Twilight Zone nailed it, dude. Can you really imagine what a kid would do with godlike powers?
Well, it you can see it reflected in some of these like Roman emperors who, you know, they'd point somebody out in the crowd, and the centurions or their royal guard would have to go over there and chop them down just because the emperor said, hey, I don't like the look on that guy's face.
Yeah. That shit's crazy, man. You think about, but that's the way humans are.
And it's, I hate to say it, but we're returning to that. Like, we got this orange man.
Yeah, we're regressing.
Our so-called president. And he's telling people, you better not say bad things about me. You better not say this. You better not say bad things about Israel.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I'm gonna wish you to the cornfield.
Yeah, exactly. Wish us into the cornfield.
And y'all can hear now. Bad journalists. You're a very bad journalist, and I'm gonna wish you into the detention centers.
Yeah, and you know, when he's having these on-air confrontations, you notice it's always women that he's talking this way to.
Oh yeah, he's an asshole.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a straight asshole.
Never in my life has there been a president that is stifling free speech. Not even close. I never even heard of such a thing. And actually, suggesting consequences for it.
Definitely, man.
And not just for, you know, saying something unpopular, but criticizing another country that really has nothing to do with our day-to-day lives.
He's a fuck. That's narcissism. That's just straight narcissism.
Yeah, and also just being part of a corrupt political system that isn't what it says it is. If it was what it was, we wouldn't be seeing this stuff going on with Israel, because it doesn't have anything to do with us. It's because of these rich bastards like the Rothschilds and the rest of the...
It's interesting you say that. You know why? Because it seems like our Constitution and the way our government is designed, it's not really equipped for a person like Trump.
No, it's not. That's why he wants to change it. That's why he's he's trying to tear everything down, and they have to sit there and tell him like a kid, no, you can't put your name on the Kennedy Center.
Yeah.
You don't have absolute power. Why do you think you do? And then his
just like the Darcy, he just keeps testing boundaries. He had never stopped testing boundaries.
And that's what a lot of people don't realize. And that's why he has to be pushed back upon, because he's doing just that. He's testing boundaries.
And you know, it's interesting too. Because like, you know, when I was younger, right? Because like I used to be a psychosocial counselor, right?
Mm-hmm.
For a place called Kedgen, right? So like I had that background, right? Like I worked for Kedgen for like 5 years. Like I actually have like real world on the training skills in psychosocial counseling. I mean, from like going to children's house, doing individual rehab with them and their parents, like teach them appropriate like social interaction skills, how to talk to their children better, how to express their feelings without frustration. You got coming from?
Yeah.
Or without violent outbursts, all these things, right?
Sure.
And I applied for like a position at like kind of like a psychological position at like what they call those places like a correctional facility, dude. And they completely turned me down, dude. Because they don't want anyone that thinks.
Yeah, I can see that. Your job is just to push the same rhetoric that supports the system that pays their bills and writes their checks.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, like, see that system they have, though? Like, they have a system place where you have to take a psychological exam, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go through a background check, right? They don't do any of that shit for the president of the United States. Why is it to work at a correctional facility, I have to go through all this deep investigation into my history, my mental state, but we don't do that for the highest office in the land?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely completely ridiculous. There's no reason, you know, given the technology that we have today, that any individual, you know, basically what I'm saying is any individual should be able to run and just be, you know, given certain outlets that they use to reach people, have a weekly talk that's televised, or come out with an app that just has all the information about everybody that's interested. And you could take forever to do it. You could have brackets and just whittle down to, you know, the top so many people. You could even do it like a fight tournament where every state votes for their president elect and all those people move on to the next round. There's a million better ways that you could do it.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, I'm talking more just like, you know, when you're determining someone's fitness for the office, right? Because sure. See, like we could have prevented a Trump if we had like a safety protocol in place, you know, like a proactive safety protocol there to be able to weed those type of individuals out for that type of position, right? Because if he would have had to go through a psychological exam like I had to go through to get hired to be a psychologist for a correctional facility, right? They would have been able to diagnose him officially as possibly having narcissistic personality disorder, right? Which tells you that he's going to push these type of boundaries, that he's never going to understand, right? That he will retaliate, right? Because that's just a known narcissistic trait, right? It's called the narcissistic injury, right? When you harm the image of the narcissist, you trigger narcissistic injury, right? And then narcissistic injury triggers what, right? Narcissistic rage, right? So we not only do we have technology, we have like this, we have all this data. And we have this wide array of all this psychological information and tests and insight, right, that we could utilize, right, to make sure that no one with a personality like Trump could ever be president, right, and we don't even use it. That's the problem I have with society. You see that with our leaders, right? We have all this data, right? This is one thing I get mad at progressives with, right? You know, our people say, like, it was economic anxiety. You know, Pew Research did a study, man. I'm talking about Pew Research. Like, this is what they do. Reputable, reliable, You know, they have no negative ratings. Like, you know, they straight out did a study and unequivocally said it was racism that gave rise to Trump, period. So even when you present this data to people, they just ignore the data. And you know what's funny? And that's what ignorance means. Ignorance has the prefix what? Ignore. Ignore. That's the Greek word it comes from. It means to consciously ignore reality. So when you're when you're ignoring data, when you're ignoring all this psychological insight we have and all these psychological abilities that kind of fairly accurately determine whether somebody's fit to do certain things, and you don't utilize them, that's malpractice.
Huh. Well, the way I see it, I've thought a little bit about this, and as far as like personality types, right? They needed this narcissistic man that almost thinks of himself as, you know, above humanity, because you need somebody that won't be accountable for their actions. You need somebody that will go to an island and mess around with an underage female, and then you can capture it on tape. Not everybody is willing to do that. You have to kind of be a certain personality type to engage in that type of activity. If you have a real strong moral fiber and you've set limits within yourself of things that you would never do, you would never get caught up in that. Yet these computer tech billionaires, bankers, royalty, there's something about them where they get caught up in that net. They get caught up in what they say in the intelligence community as a honeypot.
And you know why? Because you're dealing with people who no one ever told them no.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what really makes them dangerous. Like, they've never had any guardrails. You know, they never had
a kid that never had to stand in the corner.
He never had to negotiate his behavior, never had to tone it down, never had to be quiet, you know, never was disciplined when he disrespects anybody.
Yes.
So when we talk about those things, right, we're talking about the perfect storm. The perfect ingredients for a homegrown God complex. Period.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you can get into other areas like economic anxiety. I mean, I can guess what that probably means. When things are looking down, we look to a Republican or a so-called businessman, or the very racially charged campaign that he was putting on, starting with the birther movement and then moving on to building the wall, and the accusing the Asians of being behind the COVID pandemic and things like that. It's always kind of had that sort of a racially charged backbone to it, but that's not the only reason. It was also because of the first thing, you know, thinking he's going to be the savior of the economy. And you know, getting people in fear of the government, in fear of the left, making it seem like all the problems are because of the left, and there's this huge agenda being pushed through the left. But with anybody with a half a brain, you know, would logically conclude if these elements of control were in place, it wouldn't just be on, you know, one side of the fence or one political party. I think so many people, ever since the Epstein files were released or semi-released, released, redacted, even a lot of people on the right are like, holy shit. So
I just want to hear something wrong. Weird. Did I cut you off? I hope I didn't cut you off.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
You know, it's weird though. Like, that raises even deeper question, because we have to ask ourselves then, like, why were these people susceptible to that type of rhetoric, right?
Yeah.
Even when you talk about economic anxiety, like you study Nazi Germany and all those places, like that racial resentment arose out of economic anxiety. So a lot of times those things go hand in hand, right? Mm-hmm. Like whenever you see economic anxiety, you will see strong displays of racial resentment, racial violence, racial blame, cries for immigrants to leave. You know, because what it does basically, it triggers a scarcity mindset, right? So when people think they don't have enough resources, right, and then you believe, right, that this land is yours, right, as a white person, this is a white country, right, And then you're looking around you and it looks like resources are limited, right? Subconsciously, right? Based on what you were taught, based on how you were conditioned, right? You naturally are going to be susceptible to the belief, right? That we need to get rid of them. This is our country, right? Because you've been taught that shit all your life. In times of peace, at your table, when you ate with your parents, you were taught that shit. So now, when something like this happens, right, and you're no longer in a position where it's easier for you to regulate your emotions, you got coming from, and control your frustrations because you have too much pressure, all those latent beliefs, all those childhood, you know what I mean, explanations, right, and views of the world you were instilled with are going to start to rise to the surface and direct your behavior. And that's what's going on right now here. See, the reason why this is happening, because the majority of white people, not all, believe everything that Trump is saying. They were taught that as children, their parents spoon-fed it, and that's why it's easy for those words to take root into their subconscious, and because it already matches their worldview.
Yeah, definitely. There's a huge element to that. There's no doubt about it. I think that what we're seeing is, I've been talking about this for years, and if anybody doesn't believe me, I don't blame them, because it sounds so weird at this point. It sounded even weirder like five years ago when I first started saying it. But I think that what we're seeing is very similar to Nazi Germany. And it's going to get to the point where, just like they did with the Jewish people and the the Havana Agreement? Do I have that right? Where they actually agreed to ship the Jews to Israel? You know, there could have been a whole plot line behind that. I'm not going to get into that whole thing, but they're creating a mindset in this country where people want to see minority races shipped off, and that very well might be the end game of a lot of this stuff. It might just be to keep us fighting and keep us distracted forever. But if you want to go like real deep into some of these people's motivations, they'll tell you stuff like, why are you trying to get along with people that hate you and don't want to try, that don't want to get along? And I'd find that hard to believe, that nobody wants to try. That sounds very defeatist. But they'll use arguments like that, and you see it. Like, one thing that I figured out is, you know, Elon Musk, he's got to be a little bit racist. I'm sure a lot of people would agree with that. He put some tweets/posts out there that are, you know, you could call them borderline, but a lot of them are just kind of flat out racist. And what I figured out is, you are actually allowed to be racist on X/Twitter. You weren't before, but now you are. You are allowed to be racist. It's, you could ask Grok. It's part of the rules. As long as you aren't threatening somebody or like burning a cross on somebody's lawn, as long as it's not a certain degree of harmful, I'm not sure what the correct words would be. It's perfectly okay.
You know why, right? Because we call it racism because decent people realize that it harms people and it's wrong, right?
Yeah.
But it's really a worldview. It's really the true worldview of the American populace, right? It's not, they don't believe racism. They actually believe black and brown people are inferior, right? So when you believe people are inferior, right, those beliefs are justified, right? Because like you gotta think, like, if what they said was true, right, those would be good reasons, right? If all black and Mexican people did was rape people and didn't work, right? They're useless. You don't want them in your country, right? So if those things are true, those are good reasons to want to get rid of some motherfuckers. Hands down. You don't want people raping your women. You don't want people stealing things you work hard for. You get where I'm coming from? And if the reality was you had a group of people that were genetically predisposed to engage in that way, you want to get rid of those motherfuckers, right? The problem is, it's not true. But if you believe it's true, that's a very powerful unconscious motivator. You get where I'm coming from?
Yeah, and it's constantly reinforced. You know, we've talked about this many times, but these videos, and a lot of them are just being posted by AI or bots. You know, they show, and I've actually been tipped off by an insider that basically told me that, you know, so-called Illuminati is absolutely doing this on purpose. One day they post all these videos of black people randomly beating up white people, and the next day they post videos of white people randomly beating up black people. And they do that on purpose because it's very powerful in instigating that sort of rage that actually makes people want to do something about it, whether that means leaving a nasty comment or, you know, saying something racist or getting their buddies to think in a similar mindset. It's not that hard to trigger people and get them to think what you want if you keep turning the right screws.
Yeah, it's actually called confirmation bias. Mm-hmm. And what it does, it makes those beliefs stronger, right? So that's what I'm saying. Like when you were taught, and let's not lie, because I had a white friend tell me this before, like a real close friend of mine. He said something that like blew my fucking mind, dude, because he's like a psychologist now, right? So he did like a lot of serious inner work on it. Like this motherfucker did a lot of inner work on himself. Like he helped me do a lot of inner work. Like I could like as far as like a good, valid human being, this motherfucker is a good, valid human being. You got coming from?
Sure, yeah.
And basically, like, he told me he was younger, right? Like, he said, like, his appearance would do this weird gaslighting shit. He said that he and his brother confirmed it. His brother Jonathan confirmed it. He said they'll be at the table, man, and their parents would be eating. And he said they'll be saying horrible shit about black people, Mexican, brown people. And then they'll see, like, this look of horror on their children's face, right? Yeah. And they turn to their children and they go, but you know, mommy and daddy aren't racist. We're just telling you the truth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's tons of that sort of stuff. Definitely. I think racial humor is funny. Like, I'll level with you. Like, I think Chris Rock is probably the funniest current comedian or very much up there. And, you know, being that you are allowed to say certain things on X, I think it's great from a comedy perspective because you can get up there and make racial jokes all day, which I think pretty much everybody finds funny.
No, you can't. Only if it's against people of color, because I've said some things on X. I mean, I got kicked off X a lot of times. You know that, right? You know that personally, right?
And this thing, I'm not that familiar with it. That's kind of interesting. Could you, go ahead and dive in.
Yeah, so I would, because you know how I write, I really explain myself, right? It's clear. I might curse every now and then. I might use, like, you know, some charged language, right? But, like, even when I say the N-word in quotation marks, it's like, you sick nigger! Kick me off.
Yeah, that's weird. I think it's loosened up since then. I really do. I see people doing it left and right.
It's just straight gaslighting, man. That's what I'm telling you, dude, like, all the time, dude. I put up one article where I talked about how black men were being killed, and Twitter accused me of saying I wanted to kill black men. Just straight gaslighting, dude. Like, just straight weird shit.
That's ridiculous. You're one of those like black KKK guys.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous. But I'm just saying that to say, like, you know, you're right. It does allow racism. That's what racism is. Racism is what? White supremacy. White people get to be who they are. They get to say what they want to say, but don't let black people speak their minds. You saw that with that trial with the Anthony kid, right?
I have not followed that. Like,
I got a kid about him. Basically, you know, it was basic classic self-defense case. And not only that, it was self-defense in a stand your ground state, right? How, you know what I mean? Like, how do you get charged with murder for 35 years when you engaged in textbook self-defense in a stand your ground state?
I apologize. I should know what I'm talking about. I've been really busy. Can you explain what that whole situation was?
It's about this black kid, right? Basically, like, it was an athletic event, and, like, they had tents, right? You know how, like, we had a high school, basically, this is what I'm thinking, and you have, like, you know, the opposing team is on one side and your team is on the other side?
Sure.
He happened to be on the other side where the opposing team would be at, right?
Yeah.
And it, because it was raining, right, he kind of like went under like one of the tents. And he was just kind of there just waiting for the, you know, he didn't want to stand in the rain. So then he started getting harassed by these two kids about, you know, the white kids about, you know, get out of our tent. And I guess they start pushing, put his hands on him, right? And he had like a knife, and the knife was like a little pen knife, I understand. It wasn't even like what you would call like a deadly weapon. And I guess he like, you know, to protect himself, he struck the kid and killed the kid basically with the knife or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. But that's classic self-defense. He's being harassed, right? It's more than one guy, right? So that makes any type of weapon reasonable, right? Like maybe one guy, even if he's bigger than you, you know, it's hard to justify using deadly force, right?
Yeah.
But when you got two guys, right, fucking with you, and then you're in enemy territory, right? That's very fucking reasonable, right?
Yeah.
And then you're also in the stand your ground, a state that says you're absolutely allowed to do that, and you don't have to run or leave. That's what stand your ground means, right? You don't have to walk away from the conflict. If you're somewhere with your family and you're enjoying your space, just be somebody fucks with you and shit and harasses you and threatens you and shit, you don't have to leave, you know, to kind of show that you're being peaceful, right? You can pull out your gun and shoot that motherfucker, right?
Absolutely.
Right? Right? So we're talking about, so something that resembles classic self-defense that is plus a stand your ground state, right? Mm-hmm. It should almost be impossible to be convicted under circumstances like that.
Yeah, definitely. I've seen time and time again people let off for very similar things. I mean, the most obvious one would be George Zimmerman.
Yeah, exactly. And they chased the Asian guy who just killed this black guy, right? He chased the kid. It was the wrong kid. Over a bottle of water, shot him in the back. He got off. But this kid that was actually harassed, pushed, threatened, hit. You know, he just stabs the kid to get the motherfuckers off him, right?
Yeah.
And he goes to jail for 35 years in a stand your ground state.
Yeah, that's terrible. That's way too long. Hopefully they'll get him out on good behavior, parole, that sort of thing.
Arguments on the appeal or habeas corpus motion. But we're just saying that to say, like, when you talk about racism, that's what racism is. There is, and that's what I mean, there is no such thing as reverse racism, right? Racism is the ability to mistreat people who do not look like you that is somehow state-sanctioned or institutionally allowed or permissible. That's what racism is. It's prejudice plus power. So you can interpret the power as institutional power, state power, institutional power, you know, colleges, system of government, legal system. And that's what you see, basically. That's what it looks like.
Wait, hold on one second. I got to disagree with you a little bit. I hope that's all right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I've run into some black people that were very, very racist, and had something against me, and I did absolutely nothing to them.
Now, they call that prejudice. See, it's prejudice, but racist, prejudice plus power. Like, black people can be prejudiced, right? But black people not liking you won't stop you from getting a job. That's what they mean by that. You know, it's a different
type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they mean by that. Yeah, it doesn't mean that black people can't hurt your feelings or do something to you that's inappropriate or not fair, right? It just means, like, collectively, if black people harm you, a negative perception of you, that won't present obstacles in your path that prevent you from having opportunities and that prevent you from being able to feed your family. That's what that means.
Yeah, no, I definitely can agree with that. It's I always think of, like, you know, You get sent to prison for some reason, and the first thing you want to do is get with your race.
Hell yeah, that's the politics in there. You better.
Yeah, because if you're the, like, lone white boy and you stumble into, you know, a bunch of black dudes, they're gonna beat your ass. Period.
Not always, though. I'll be honest, not always, because a lot of black people aren't like that. But yeah, but like we don't really trip like that. And I'm not saying it's because we're different. It's because we've been conditioned in it. We have a level of empathy that other races don't have. When you've been hunted down by hounds, strung up, beat, kicked out of stores, like, you know what that feels like. So that alone kind of prevents you from being willing to do that to other people. There's always exceptions to the rule, but you got to think about how we were conditioned, right? And we used to say this all the time in the hood. It was one of the basic jokes, right? And this is what they mean. And you hear black people say that time. We attack a black person before we attack a white person. Like, white persons can walk through black thug neighborhoods in a suit and tie and nobody will fucking fuck with them. And you know why?
Because they assume you're somebody's lawyer.
No. Think about the power that that group has over us, right? So if we attack somebody white, right, we're going to make the spot hot, right? So if you're trying to sell drugs and make a living, if you attack a white person and you're black, they will have so many police cars in your fucking neighborhood looking for your black ass, it'll make their head fucking spin. They will leave no stone fucking unturned. They will make an example out of you. And that's just a historical pattern. And it's something from history, right? Because when you have slaves, right, like people you are chronically mistreating, when you mistreat people, right, you're already, that's a breeding ground for hate. You automatically make those people hate you, right?
Absolutely.
So you got to make sure that you have to discourage those people from attacking you, right? So whenever a black person attacks you or got out of line, the response was swift and undeniable. Right? Because part of it was deterrence, right? If any of you black motherfuckers ever tried what they did, we will have your heads on fucking pikes for your community to see every fucking day, because we can't have you guys attacking us. That's what that's about. And that is carried over into this century right here.
Yeah, that goes into the, you know, that story that we've talked about quite a bit. Nat Turner. That,
exactly.
God told him to rise up and get out there and, you know, free some of his brethren and kill a bunch of white people. And that's what they did. They made quite a bit of progress. And
but you got to think about John Brown. John Brown had the same experience, right? Mm-hmm. He was a white guy, right? And they did the same thing to his ass, too. That's what they mean.
Yeah. They ate him. They boiled
him alive, they ate his body. Exactly.
Yeah. But they made trinkets out of it.
Have you ever read a book that's called, you should get it, it's called The Delectable Negro?
I've heard about that. A lot of them try to tell you that that's fake, but I don't think so.
That's not fake at all. Yeah, they bred us as food. You know it's not fake. You know why? Because when you see somebody is not human, right, and you're on top of the food chain, you naturally see them as food. At one point, you're going to want to try to eat them. If you literally believe that something is not human, whether it be a fish, tiger, bear, cantaloupe, you believe you're domesticating this beast, right? You're gonna have an urge to eat them because you don't see them as human. It's just basic psychology, dude.
Yeah, and I think we can figure out from some of this Epstein stuff that there must be something addicting about human meat.
Oh, that's just a power thing. If you believe it gives you power, right? And they believe that too, because you can see it in their
movie. You power. It does, actually.
You're probably right. Because you remember that movie Ravenous? That's what that was about, right?
Yeah,
That's exactly what that was about, right?
Yeah.
You eat him, you take on there. I mean, he was super strong for beating people.
But, we were talking about this before, but there were certain papers written. I think they're called Lynch Laws. And it was
the Willie Lynch Laws?
Yeah, it was stuff about, like, manipulating black people by pitting like lighter skinned black people against darker skinned black people. A lot of really sort of sick psychological Illuminati type of shit going on there.
Yeah. You know, it's sick, but it's not sick either. Because when you think about it from like, and that's what I'm trying to do, then when you're enslaving people, you have to do that. You get where I'm coming from? I'm, you know, it's definitely immoral, but I'm saying like, this is a matter. How else are you going to be able to pull it off? You got coming from? If that's your business, right? That's a very rational structure, right? If you believe you have to mistreat people and force people to do your bidding, then you have to have a punishment system in place, right? So these people don't revolt and punish you for punishing them, right?
Yeah.
So when you understand they had to have that, so how do you control that many people, man? It got 1.2. That's why they tripped out. They got where slaves are starting to outnumber the white population, right?
Yeah.
So you gotta understand, dude, like and they'll tell you this, guards will tell you this in the pen all day long. You talk to a real guard, he say, we control those prisoners because those prisoners allow us to control them. Right?
Sure.
So if white people didn't somehow instill some type of serious fear in black people where they can control them, black people would have got exact revenge a long time ago. All of us would have, right? All of us would have been Nat Turner's, right? If not for those fail-safe mechanisms, right?
Hey, we got a. Whenever you're ready, we got a comment from the chat we should probably address.
Sure.
So this is from Messiah Isho. Ask, how did we get through the 70s and 80s in America? That was peak black culture. Everyone was quite happy. And then they changed the culture, promoted thug and drug rap, and it all declined.
Yeah, white people did that. That's part of that control structure. When you see a group of people starting to rise, because the first hip-hop started very conscious, right? You had Public Enemy. You know, you can't say Run DMC was like that, right? But like when you get like when you kind of like start maturing the Public Enemy and you had a couple other rappers and people wearing the black medallions. Because what happens is when people become more self-aware and they become prouder and they gather more self-esteem, right? They become harder to what? Harder to control, right?
Think about the timing too, when it happened.
Yeah, right, exactly.
After the Contra War and the introduction of
exactly
crack into the black communities by the CIA and Freeway Rick Ross.
Yeah, Freeway Rick Ross. I was in jail with him.
The rapper or the real one?
The real one.
Oh wow! That's
yeah, I was in Cali when
he's been on the show before a long time ago.
Groovy man. But check this out. No, but I'm going back to control again, right? Because think about it, right? So what did they do, basically? They used their money, right? They seduced rappers, right? Bought into the industry, took it over, right? To what? Because they realized, what is rap, right? It's the perfect mimetic teaching tool, right? Because you heard the word, I'm going to get deep on you. You heard the word meme before, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, it sounds like what? Gene, right?
Yeah.
So you read Richard Dawkins' The Selfish Gene, right? He talks about the meme. It's real quick, right? But he says something like, the gene is the building block of life, right? And the meme is the building block of culture and consciousness, right? Because our consciousness expands through our understanding of language, and language expands to our understanding of the environment. Like the more we learn about our environment, the more we learn about physics, our vocabulary increases, right? And then that language shapes the way we think and how we see the world, right? So when you have these rappers and all they're doing is injecting self-esteem and confidence, telling black men they're kings, respect the black woman, stand tall, and then it's affecting like the black Afro-Ricans and all these other people and shit like that, right? What you're doing is you're starting to create a very confident people, which might one day overtake you, right? So what they did, basically, right, they had to get in there to do what? To control the rap narrative, right? So then once they got in there to control the rap narrative, right, they begin to make sure that they kept the black men, and hear what I say, kept black people in what I like to call the nigger state, right? Because the nigger is the creation of white men, right? It's the slave you beat up, you broke, you told him you're lazy, you're not smart. You don't know how to think. You're just a stage away from it. They got to keep us in that mindset because that mindset is going to always keep them above us. So they can't allow us to have a powerful narrative that has a powerful reach, right? And it's affecting young black minds, right? So as a government, right, they have to control that narrative, right? So that's when they come here and start injecting all this niggerism in there. You got coming from Robert Townsend. Have you ever saw a show called Hollywood Shuffle?
Sounds familiar.
You got to see that. I'm not going to, but you got to see that. But he talks about like being black in the industry. And he'd talk about how like he'd go do a role as like a black thug, right?
Yeah.
And the white producer said, no, don't do it. Like, you got to do it like this. You killed it, my brother, man, you know. So he's telling how he's actually teaching the black actor how to talk jive. You got to cover up? But that's what that whole movie is.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's like the old Shirley Temple movies. And
Yeah.
The black face and the big white around the lips and all that. Just
yeah, exactly. Yeah, but in that movie, like, he did teach them how to talk jive. They're like, don't you got to do it like you killed it, my brother. You get what I'm coming from? But that's them controlling the narrative, right? You want to see? I'm actually taking the stags.
Well, that actually, you know, brings up another important fact that in the slavery days, they were also forced to talk that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because you have to, because you can't do anything. Because remember, if we're going to say that like racism and white supremacy is close to narcissism, right? Then what you're doing is you got to make sure that you don't trigger the narcissistic injury, right? If I think I'm superior to you, right? If I do anything that remotely suggests you might not be superior to me, that's going to result in an ass whipping. Because I just triggered the narcissistic injury. Yes. It's just like there's like a movie there's a movie called Penitentiary, right? And it's like all these lifers, right? And a few of these lifers, right? They just kind of like just lost their sense of self, right? So now they're in there just raping men, right? Right? But yeah, they don't think they're gay, right? They don't. And you better not. So then they just literally take a man and turn him into a woman, right? Like in this scene, right? This one dominant criminal, right? He keeps beating up this guy that he raped, right? Because whenever this guy stands up to pee, right? He reminds this prisoner, right, that he's really fucking the dude, right? So he beats the dude up. He said, "What I tell you, you squat when you pee. You squat when you pee. You squat when you bust in my bubble. You a woman. You squat when you pee," right?
Oh,
that's the narcissistic injury, right? Because when you do something that counteracts that image, right, you trigger narcissistic injury. That's what it is in white supremacy.
Never go to prison.
Definitely, but that's really like, it was a movie. But that's really like,
I don't doubt that really goes on though.
Yeah, but that's what I'm trying to tell you. Yeah, but that's what I'm trying to tell you. See, that's narcissistic injury. So that's why they do that, right? Look, it's very dangerous, and they call you up. It's very dangerous for a black person to look competent or superior around white people. They have to knock you down to size because it attacks their image. They're supposed to be smarter than you. They're supposed to be. That's why Barack Obama drove him crazy, right? He triggered narcissistic energy. How dare you, nigga? That's supposed to be me. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's like the story of the farmer that shot the neighbor's cow because the guy was black and he didn't do anything to him. He just had a cow and he didn't like the idea of him being better than him in any way, even just having one extra cow.
Definitely. It's interesting you say that because that's what the Count of Monte Cristo is about, right? Because that's like two white girls. Yeah. Remember, he goes, he wanted that guy's girl because he was poor, right? The main character was real quick,
our buddy Logan's saying hi to us.
Say hi, what's up, Logan? I'm still going to call you, man. I've been kind of like, I'm trying this case right now, so I've been busy. But once I get some free time, man, I'm going to call you real quick because I got like a hearing on the 7th.
Yeah, shoot me your new phone number over X or something, too, because old stuff doesn't work.
Yeah, he gave me his new phone number, too. I can shoot it to you, too, if he doesn't, Danny.
Okay, right on. I'll give him a chance to do it.
Yeah. But I want to mention the thing about, then I'll let you take the stage. In the Count of Monte Cristo, remember, the rich kid was like, you know, he told him, too. He said, I'm a noble. You know, my family's rich. I'm not supposed to be jealous of you.
Yeah.
That's what he told him, right? Because, you know, he was supposed to have that pretty girl. He was the rich kid. His family was noble. You know what I mean? He was just a peasant, right? That's narcissistic injury. So what did he do? A narcissistic smear campaign. He framed him, right? He said he was conspiring with Napoleon, framed him, right? Got him put in jail, right? That's the smear campaign, right? And then once he did that, what? He took his life. He took his woman. He married her.
Yeah. That's a good story.
That's what it is. It's a straight tale of narcissism. A rich guy, just like Trump, thought he was entitled to everything, seen something he couldn't have, and one of his friends had it. So what did he do? He smeared his friend to steal his friend's woman and steal his life.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. This is kind of off topic, but we have all these just movies and TV shows coming out that are just beyond stupid, yet this great literature exists where, you know, you're telling stories like the Count of Monte Cristo that are, you know, actually it's a commentary on society, and we have works like that out there, but so many people are completely ignorant to things like that, and you know, things like Shakespeare and all I swear we're digressing from a higher intellectual state that probably peaked around the time of the Greeks or maybe the Romans.
You know why? Because you can make more money if you're dumb. That's really, we're in the attention seeking culture now. Like some people, man, all they do when I look at Instagram, all you do is have half-ass naked women just dancing.
Yeah, just appealing to the most base.
Yeah, a ton of likes. Human. And then, you know, like people tapping into grievances. You know, like either black men talking bad about black women or black women talking bad about black men, you know, or people saying man bad or, you know, women bad. You know what I mean? It's not really trying to understand human existence, you know, or trying to figure out, you know, why we're here, why we're doing what we're doing. You know, is there a better way to live? None of that's taking place anymore, because at one point in time, you had to be that type of thinker or that type of person to make it in society. Now you can be just a straight dumb shit, dumb as hammers. We have, you know, we literally have a pedophile and a spoiled rich kid in the fucking White House, dude. There's nothing to aspire to now. I don't have to work hard at all. And I'm telling you, man, and I seen it. There was this, I'll give you an example of this. What people are looking for now is the perfect viral moment. And now they're actively trying to manufacture those moments too. I give you an example. Like, look at Mayor Mamdani, right? His entire claim to fame is that somebody caught him on video getting an ISIS face, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he became a household name, right? So then you have this one black guy, I think, in Louisiana, right? He gives this speech in front of I guess, a city council or something like that. And he goes, you know, all MAGA is the last breath of the Confederacy, right? And they go, oh, he should run for office. Beautiful, brilliant young man. Running for office. So they know all I need is that one viral moment. One viral moment. And somebody already in the game to like and retweet me. And you know, and next thing I'll be making six figures. And now they're actively trying to manifest. I mean, it's all a con game now, man.
But like with I would be fine with it if it was a level playing field. I would actually love a reality like that, but it's not. The moments that go viral are the ones that Elon wants to go viral because he owns the whole platform, or, you know, equivalent stuff on the other platforms.
Yeah.
It's all gatekept, is what I'm trying to say.
All of them gatekeep. All of them gatekeep. I'm telling you, man, like what recently happened to me, that was a product of gatekeeping. Like all of them gatekeep, dude. Like they're scared of competition. They don't want to change. So I tell you something, we talked about it before, man. I can't tell you how many people on all these sites steal from me. Because, you know, I used to teach kids, too. I see my language. I see my words. I see my structure. And we come back in the world of academia. That's plagiarism, right?
Yeah, of course.
But they won't cite me at all. None of them say, Dr. Robert said this. You know, they just completely steal it and pretend like they made it. And that's the problem, which is there's no honor anymore.
Yeah, I've had a very similar experience, and
we had it with Candace Owens.
Yeah,
well, Candace Owens' first stick was what? Ben Shapiro talking about black people, right? As soon as she got kicked out, she started watching our show. We were talking about what she do? She stole our platform.
Yeah, she's gone off the deep end lately.
No, but that's what I'm saying. But that's essentially what they do. Basically, they're thirsty. They find a new hook. And they're taking from any of their parasites, dude. They're vampires.
If she's real, though, I mean, I kind of like her now. Like, she's telling the truth finally.
No, but I think they just know what people want to hear now. Because I'm telling you, man, the reason why I'm suspicious about all of that Gaza shit,
yeah,
especially, is because, like, it's a cheap way to secretly smuggle in anti-Semitism. Because, like, you have people who are allowed to, like, point out AIPAC and get people to somehow harbor some ill will against Jewish people, right?
Yeah.
Based on Gaza, right? You have people who are like literally Nazis being able to like sort of like detect some common ground to kind of get in and infiltrate our organizations by somehow, you know, like using Gaza or other things taking place in the Middle East as a shield to conceal their own anti-Semitic views, and to also somehow kind of find like common ground. Because if you take out like the negative things about Jewish people and you replace it with AIPAC, right? You seem like you ran into your mirror. This person sees the world the way I see it. But what he did, he just took out a little some racist sort of placeholders, right, and replaced it with more benign placeholders or more socially acceptable placeholders, like AIPAC instead of saying Jewish people.
Well, I prefer the term Zionist because I don't want to put a label on an innocent Jewish person who basically believes in the same God that I do and just happened to have innocently, you know, through political rhetoric and through their families and their environment, they wound up being a citizen of Israel. They're pretty innocent at the end of the day, although a lot of them will harbor the same views as the Zionist leaders like Netanyahu and the rich aristocracy.
Yeah, because they're a product of that society. That's why it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. That's why those individuals are allowed to flourish. Because a lot of people who pretend they're disgusted really have those beliefs. Like they believe black people are inferior. They believe they believe those things, right? And they believe those beliefs are justified, right? So when you hear about persuasion, if you know anything about persuasion or anything like that, a lot of that makes that possible is a sense of shared values, right? So when you have somebody speaking in a way, even though you won't admit it, but it's something you deeply believe on a subconscious level, that's powerfully seductive. And that's what people don't understand. That's the appeal. It's not that Trump is spewing racism, is that they believe that racist bullshit and they don't believe it's racist. They believe it's a true, accurate assessment of these other people's character.
But, a big issue that I have is, and tell me if you're like aware of this, that it, according to, a hardcore Zionist, rabbi, Hebrew, whatever you want to call it, their beliefs in the end times are actually that, a Christian like myself that believes in the book of Revelations believes that Christ is going to return and rule over the land. But these people actually believe that they are going to be elevated above all other nations and races, and they're going to rule the world as a superior race.
You know what? There's some interesting things, man. A lot of that shit is open to that. Because I read the shit. It is open to that. I mean, like, I'm going to say it like this, and we're not going to, because I don't want to get your channel snatched off. We got to be careful. Seriously.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm going to say it this way in a very soft, innocuous way. Believing you are the chosen people of God is a very tremendous idea. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Leave it at that. It's a very tremendous idea that will have very unknown consequences on the human psyche.
Yeah, it's a disease like that, of the mind. It's really a disease of the mind because, if you're a Christian and you believe in Christ, Christ's message was the idea of only Jews being chosen and going to heaven, that ends now. Now it's for everybody. And if you don't believe that, then you're not a follower of Christ. You're not a Christian. Yeah. You're something completely different. And that's fine. Not everybody has to be a Christian. I'm a Christian. I don't believe in pushing Christianity on people. But you'll never see the day where I start saying that that's okay. That's being a Nazi. A Zionist and a Nazi are two sides of the same coin.
It's interesting you say that, though, because, when you think about it, Christianity, the Christianity that supposedly Christ practiced, right? It's very egalitarian, right? It's anti-elitist, right? Because remember, at one point, right, you couldn't get saved unless you go to the priest, right? You had to have an offering, right? And Christ changes that, right? He says your body is the temple of God, right? And God, you can come to God on your own, right? Because remember, the reason why they didn't like Christ, right? Because Christ is the end of the priestly class. That was prophesied. Christ came to end the priestly class, right? You no longer need to get a goat. You no longer need to offer to the priest to get absolved of your sins, right? Because Christ is going to die for you, right? He paid that price. So now he's the goat. Now he's the sacrifice, right? So now if you believe, right, and confess your sins and swear you believe him, right, he is the intercessor. He will speak on your behalf to the Father, right?
He is the way, he is the truth.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. See, so that way you don't have to go to the priest anymore. You know, you don't have to depend on the temple anymore. You don't have to give your money to these people anymore, right?
It's contradictory to the Talmud.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But no, it's not, because they don't believe Christ is the Messiah. They really don't.
Exactly, exactly.
It was a lot of people at that time claiming they were the Messiah. And this is what Nietzsche gets in. Christ's narrative just won over. They thought Barnabas was the Messiah.
Sure.
They thought a lot of other people come around. Yeah.
You also had the fact that, I mean, the reason his narrative went over was because it's proof of chain. It's like proving a chain of documents. We had the apostles. The apostles started the church, and then the church became what it is today. But through that lineage of the apostles and things like the Coptic church, we know Christ actually existed, was a real historical person. We just can't do that with the other candidates.
Well, some say Christ is not a real historical person. There's only really one mention of. We only have like one.
Some say that.
We do have like, I forget his name. He's like a Jewish historian. I'm trying to forget from his name.
Oh,
but he does talk about in his memoir that a man named Jesus was crucified by the Romans at the time he was writing.
Yeah,
he does say that.
That's Joseph Flavius.
Huh?
Joseph Flavius.
No, it's a Jewish guy, like older than that.
Yeah, he was Jewish.
Maybe, but this is like during that time.
He was very close to that time. It's probably him, but there were others.
Yeah, because it's during that time. Because he's basically like it's like his journal, right? And he's talking about what's going on, and he's just saying like, also we had an execution, right? And his name's the person who was executed.
Yeah, you know, I coincidentally, I've been getting into some really deep discussions with some. Jewish rabbinical experts, and you know, they thought they were going to tear me to shreds on this topic, and they did good job on their end. But you know, I was seeing through a lot of their arguments. You know, according to them, the entire Christianity is a Roman conspiracy. I'm sure you know that.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, their whole idea is that everything that Christ did, you know, it was basically just a guy, and everything's exaggerated with pagan elements on top of that, which there is evidence for. I'll be the first one to tell you that the Catholic Church is extremely pagan. I'm against Catholicism because they are worshipers of idols. It says very strictly in the teachings of the Bible that you are not to worship idols. And you know, one of our people in the chat room actually kind of pointed this out. It's something that I've been talking about a lot lately. But the image of Christ on the cross—you're not supposed to worship a cross. You're not even supposed to have that like at the front of your church or anything like that. And you're especially not supposed to have an effigy of Jesus dying on the cross and for people to go up to be giving it offerings and worship and things like that. That's very specifically forbidden by the Bible.
And, well, you know, when you read like the Gospel of Paul, right? You know, that's a reasonable interpretation, right? Because he says things like, you know, like beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees, right? And then he gives us up, you know, like, you know, you can't patch a new wineskin, you know, with whatever he says, some shit like that. But basically what he's saying basically is like, you know, like the Pharisees, remember, because like it was a money making machine, right? It was like a capitalistic enterprise, low key, right? Like the priests made a lot of money and shit like that, right?
Yeah, the Pharisees were high citizens in Roman life.
Yeah, so basically, like they were able to like use Christ and his martyrdom, right, as a way to resmuggle back in the priestly class. So that's why you have all those things again. And that's why the Roman church has so much money, right? Because you still have people doing these same things, but it's in a different form.
Well, right? there's what we call Roman edits, and that's probably the main focal point that you're talking about now. Like Jesus telling people, and I learned this in one of my early interviews with Ralph Ellis, who's an author, and he pointed out that Jesus was part of the rebellion against Rome because of taxes. He would never tell people to pay their taxes.
Oh, no, no, that, you know, no, that's true. That, when I was in political science, when we taught that. Christ as like a socialist revolutionary doctrine, right? Well, God Christ, people think like it wasn't like what claiming to be the Messiah that got Christ crucified. That's a smokescreen. What got him crucified is when he picked up that coin from Caesar and he said, "Give unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and give unto God what is God's."
Yeah, exactly.
Right. You know, when you start talking about the taxation and shit like that, it's basically what he's saying, you know what I mean? The people come first. You know what I mean? This coin, this is, see, giving back his coins, you know, but basically, you know, like, your food, where we go, that shit is ours. That's from God. So give unto Caesar what is Caesar, give unto God. That was a very revolutionary statement. And that's what led to his crucifixion. That the state perceived that as a revolutionary statement that can undermine the wealth of Rome.
Wait, I'm not sure I'm understanding this. Can you reiterate?
He's picking up a coin with Caesar's face, right? And the thing is like, Lord, should we pay taxes? That's what they ask, right? Because that's how the Jewish people, basically, that's what they say, how the Pharisees set him up. And then Jesus gives, like, you know, because, like, put it this way, like, if you're a politician, right, you have to be careful how you phrase things, right? Yes. So he did outright say you don't have to pay Caesar, right? But he said something that didn't seem like it was in support of Caesar either, right? He says, give unto Caesar's what is Caesar's and give unto God what is God, right? Now, if you understand anything, right, nothing is supposed to be higher than the king of Rome, right? So you're saying there's this force, right, that has more authority, right? Emperor of Rome.
That's interesting.
You get where I'm coming from?
I get what you mean now. Yeah. Yeah. You're saying that God, he's saying that God comes first and this money, it's meaningless. Exactly. Okay. I can vibe to that. It's a tricky topic. There's even people that believe that actually John the Baptist was Jesus and Jesus was just he's just a preacher. Or a blasphemer or something like that. And then you have Islam, which actually, unlike classic Judaism, does believe in Christ and consider
himself a prophet. You know what's funny, though? Funny too, bro, Danny?
Yeah.
Is that that's a small screen too, man. That's irrelevant distraction because that's exactly what the Bible tells you, right? Not everybody accepted Christ as the Messiah. That's actually in the Bible. So that actually confirms what's in the Bible, right? If they don't believe he was Christ, it was a lot of people in the Bible who didn't believe he was Christ. Christ is famous for saying a prophet is never received in his own hometown. At the time, the Bible's full of people that thought Jesus was faking the phone. That's why they constantly test him. There was a big debate. Nobody really believed he was the Messiah. That's why he got crucified. That was part of the blasphemy. He was claiming to be something he wasn't. What I'm saying is that what's funny is like when you hear people talk like that, it's like they're telling you something that the Bible didn't already tell you. Well, you know, a lot of them, they didn't even believe you. No shit. That's what the book says. That's why he was crucified. You're just giving me historical evidence that's validating what was taking place in that fucking book. There was a lot of motherfuckers around that time didn't believe he was the Christ at all. Thought he was a madman and thought he was a bullshitter. Thought he was just running around doing tricks like an evangelist preacher. He constantly got them from, you know, I do all these miracles. And a lot of you don't even believe these fucking miracles. You get where I'm coming from? He reputed everyone. He said only a wicked, faithless generation looks for a sign from heaven because they asked him to perform a fucking miracle.
Yeah, and that's what the Antichrist is purported to do at some point, is to perform miracles.
Yeah, exactly. But what I'm saying basically is that, like, that's basically, you're just basically giving me, like, a historical rendition of what the Bible already says the life of Christ was. A life filled with disbelievers. People thought he was crazy. They were taunting him. If you're God, conjure up angels and get your ass off this cross we nailed you to. If you're God, you can take your bitch ass off this cross. Oh, you ain't no fucking God. We just nailed you to the fucking cross. Where's your fucking God now? I just stabbed you with a fucking spear.
And fuck you, know, you that's, and your God. That's why you know, this is kind of delving into the occult, but the main thing that the demons, they won't tell you that Jesus did not exist, but one thing that they will never admit is that the resurrection was real. And I'm talking about exorcisms and channelers and, you know, anybody that has communicated with these entities.
I believe it.
But hey,
I communicated with those entities too. Those entities is real, so.
Absolutely. But we do have a little comment. You know, want to keep things kind of interactive. This is from our buddy Raven, who we haven't talked in a while. The histories we have come from after the Sabbatian Frankists in Constantinople, the takeover, they come after the Sabbatian Frankists in Constantinople, the takeover of the religions by them through the bloodline of Constantine. Interesting.
Well, he's kind of talk about the Council of Nicaea, because they did kind of get together and they kind of decided what books were going to be in the Bible. Like, they literally just manufactured a religion and they left certain books out. Like, literally left certain books out because they thought these books would have a bad influence on the populace in a way which make the population challenge the state or challenge the church, basically.
Yeah, so going back to the beginning, what happened was Constantine, he saw a sign in the sky. I think it was the Sol Invictus. Do I have that right? Hard going off the top of your head. But it was a sign saying, conquer in my name. And after that, he became a believer in Christ. And the whole Council of Nicaea happened. And like you said, they got rid of things like the Book of Enoch that I find to be supremely important in any theological discussions.
There's a lot of gospels that left out. And, you know, it's interesting too about that too, basically, is that, like, when you look at that shit too, right? Like, that's basically like the story of Saul told all over again, like in a different way. That's what I'm saying, dude. A lot of these motherfuckers, to me, man, were just straight charlatans. You know, like, if you have a group of people who have that type of religious feather and you want to win them over, what perfect way to prevent your converter? I had a vision. You can't prove it.
That's how most cults and religions have started, just a vision.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the problem with a lot of people, man. We are far too quick to go off what people say, dude, and we don't investigate, dude. That's the whole issue right there. Yeah,
that's kind of my issue with Islam. Not to pick on them, but, you know, Muhammad, he grabbed the Kabbalah stone and he hopped on a Pegasus and he landed on top of a mountain and married a 6-year-old. And, like, this is just word of mouth sort of conjecture. How do we know he rode on a Pegasus? At least Christ didn't ride on a damn Pegasus. He might have performed some miracles, but that sounds a little far-fetched for a religion that's, what, about 500 years old?
All that shit is far-fetched. Walking on water. You know, because we're not talking about a magic trick. We're talking about real transmutation. We're not talking about, like, somebody pretending to turn water into wine. He actually has wine underneath and something turns around. And then you know, like a jar of wine appears and it looks like he made wine. They're literally saying the motherfucker turned water into wine, like true transmutation. Motherfucker actually walked on water, like in the deep sea. Walked on water. It actually, as long as Peter looked at him and had faith, that man can walk on water too. You know, all that shit is like tall tales, like a motherfucking. Because I've never really seen anybody walk on water except Chris Angel, and we know that was a trick.
Yeah, well, yeah. A person will tell you, like a skeptic or maybe an atheist or doubter will tell you that all the gods performed these miracles before Christ did. Dionysus turned water into wine. Yeah, Zeus walked on the water. And, you know, I've thought about this quite a bit. And it's also interesting that Christ calls himself the morning star. That's kind of a concept that comes from the pagan world of the gods, almost as if he's also telling us there's more to it. And he's kind of coming in the name of the old gods. A lot of people are going to be mad at me for saying that, but, you know, as you know, I'm into the gods and the pagan world and stuff like that.
It's hard not to see those parallels, though.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, those similarities, dude. If you're a smart person and you read and you're curious and you're open-minded, it's very easy for you to see those parallels. It's very easy for you to make those connections. Like, even when you talk about pagan gods, right? Like, you can always draw a parallel between, like, the Orishis and their god of justice and, you know, their god of thunder to, you know, Thor, the thunder god. You know, Ogun, you know, he's a blacksmith like Hephaestus. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like we're talking about the same gods, right?
Yeah, and, you know, going back to the thing about the Catholics and this idea that perhaps the enemies of the Jews, the Canaanites, actually kind of took over at some hidden point in history. But this idea of Jesus being on the cross, you know, he has the you know, a lot of people don't like this, the racial element of, you know, he was an Arabic or even black, and he was turned into a white man, and they're actually worshiping an effigy that didn't look anything like the original Christ.
But you have to do that. Why would you want a god that doesn't look like you? How can you have slaves and then have a black, and Jesus is black?
Well, yeah, absolutely. But also there's theories that that's actually Baal, the god Baal, because Baal, he was resurrected as well. But the difference is God resurrected Christ, but Baal was resurrected by his own power, his own self.
Dionysus was too.
He was resurrected too.
Rabbit hole. That's an old thing, man. The divine son. Alan Watts talks about that. That's an old religious thing. That's in every religion. Even Buddha's a divine son.
Sure.
They all have these stories of divine son. This one person, right?
Horus was the son. Ra was
exactly.
The son.
Exactly. That's going to be born, right? That's going to bring peace and prosperity to mankind. Krishna is a divine son.
Yep.
Rama is a divine son. They're all divine sons.
Yeah.
That's a common thing.
I believe, you know, I should know this because I'm Japanese, but I believe that the Japanese royalty believe they came from the sun.
Yeah, the divine son. That's a common thing. The divine son. That's going to come and, like, you know, like, in like kind of like correct the mistakes of the father. You know, that's what the divine son is, basically.
Sure. This is an interesting comment. I'm just going to flash this up here real quick. What's really going to, because I like anything new or novel as far as ideas go, but Messiah Issue says, what's really going to rock your boat is when you realize that the Anunnaki of Sumer ran a controlled opposition script multiple times throughout eras.
That's what the priestly class is. They're running game on you. You know what I mean? You know, man, no one explains the birth of God better than Nietzsche. You ever heard how Nietzsche explains the birth of God?
Ooh, you know, I did get a little bit into Nietzsche, but he has many books that are as thick as my thigh.
Yeah, I used to be like, I used to almost be a Nietzsche scholar. Like, every philosophy major I know just about, man, got into philosophy because of Nietzsche, basically.
Yeah, but there's Nietzsche things I like about him and things I don't like.
Nietzsche has a very practical perspective, man. He kind of does. Because, like, you can see all elements in Nietzsche, dude. Like, even Freud said, like, he was afraid to read Nietzsche because he didn't want to see the Nietzsche beat him to it. Because, you know, Nietzsche had, like, Thanatos and Eros. Freud had the id and the superego. That's Thanatos and Eros. It's the same concept.
Yeah, but he went very deep.
But Nietzsche talks about how, like, basically God is the product of a very weak runt of a man, right? So you have a society, right? And we're talking about, like, primitive society, right? We're like, what I mean by primitive, you don't have too many laws protecting you. You don't have, like, if somebody sees you with your girl and you're having sex, like, a stronger man can literally just, like, pull you off your woman and just start having sex with your woman, and there's nothing you can do with it. You know where I'm coming from? Yeah. So then you have this weak man in the society. He's just getting bullied and pushed around. Whenever he gets food, a stronger man walks up to him and just takes it from him, eats it right in his face. Whenever he gets a chance, you know, to spread his gene pool, you know, the stronger man, he kicks him to the side and takes the woman and makes love to the woman that he spent all this time courting to, right? So this man, he can't live around these lions, right? He runs, right? This motherfucker breaks, right? He gets the fuck out of there. These motherfuckers beat me up, stealing my woman, breaking my self-esteem, right? So he's in these fucking mountains, right? Isolated, right? So he's eating veggies and all. She stumbles across some hallucinogen mushrooms, right? He eats these motherfuckers, right? So he starts tripping, right? She starts noticing things when he's tripping, right? He knows, you know, at this certain time of the year, we always get an eclipse, right? And the sky goes black. But nobody really paid attention to it. But since I got my ass kicked and I got kicked out of society, now and I'm all alone, and I'm just over here eating, passing time, right? And I'm on these fucking drugs that I don't know is drugs, and I'm seeing this eclipse, right? And now, and then all of a sudden, I start hearing voice, and I start hearing God, right? But it's really just my inner resentment, right? So one day when I'm eating these mushrooms a lot, and I'm really getting this belief reinforced daily, right? I know about this eclipse, right? I find a way to get back in society and take revenge on these people who are treating and kicking me out of society. So one day I run down to society, right when I know this eclipse is going to take place, right? And I go, "You are all evil! I met God, the one who created you, and he said you are all an abomination. The way you treat other mankind, and he said he's going to show you a sign, and he's going to show you his awesome power, and he's going to take away the sun to let you know that if you treat human beings like this again, he's going to punish you." And they're all laughing
at
him.
You're making me like this guy, though.
and then they're all laughing at him, and then all of a sudden the eclipse comes. The sky goes dark. "God help us! Oh, shit! God is taking away the sun!" And then they all start worshiping this little motherfucker, right? That's the birth of God.
Hold on. Dr. Robert, do you really think this is where it all came from?
Like, yeah. It's that simple.
Really?
Evolution.
That's not the truth.
Somebody had a fucking... I'm talking about Nietzsche said it. Somebody had a fucking need and had to solve a fucking problem. Sure. And if you're weak, you have to find a way to protect yourself. And there's no better way to protect yourself as a weak person to create this psychological mechanism, if you're smarter, that tells people, yeah, you might be able to beat me. You might even be able to take what I own. But when you die, God is going to punish you. He's going to burn you. He's going to kill you. It's just a creation of somebody who had a need.
Well, hey, hear me out for a second. So you know where witches came from, right?
No, enlighten me.
So, you know, witches obviously are females. And, you know, back in the Middle Ages, obviously women didn't have a whole lot of rights. Husband could, you know, whop you over the head, hit you with the frying pan, tie you to a chair. You know, if for a man to rape his wife, that was considered normal. And in fact, a knight could go rape a maiden and she was obligated to marry him, et cetera, et cetera. I won't go on about the horrors of history, but
I'm trying to bring that shit back.
What was that?
I said they're trying to bring that shit back.
yeah, maybe, but the whole idea is that women, there's a power inequality there, and that's why women would use magic, because if you use magic, it doesn't matter how big or strong you are. You know, you're using the mind over matter and using
a lot of your brawn. A lot of that magic is some good motherfucking pussy. Let's be real, dude.
Yeah, no, that's part of it. You're right. Makeup, the things that Azazel taught to humanity. And you know the original witches were the wives of the fallen angels, the Watchers. That's how all the magic actually got started.
We know magic is real. Magic is real.
Absolutely. And see, that's why I do believe in God, because I've had all these demonic experiences. And I know that demons, there's demons, and there's also some kind of good guys that could chase them away.
Nietzsche's not saying there's no God, right?
Yeah.
Nietzsche's kind of saying we assume God is interested in us, right? Like, you feel these presence, right? But like the whole argument is, does God actually care, right? And our founding fathers, they're actually deists. They believe that, like, they believe in a God, right? But they believe, like, God created the universe, the earth, set everything in motion and then jetted. Like, God is just, in their mind, God, just in simpler forms, if I'm explaining this to a child, God is nothing but an absentee father. Like, he came, he created the universe, gave us everything you need. He's just like this creative force, right? All he does is just travel to the fucking space and just create shit and moves on. That's what deism is.
I actually agree with that, but the thing is, though, he's going to come back and he's going to look us all in the eye and he's going to say, "Y'all fucked up."
No, because you remember, I'm just fucking with you, but you remember True Blood? You ever seen True Blood?
I love that show.
You remember that when they were talking about, like, the chick that was in the Dionysus, right? You know, the vampires, they've been around, like some vampires have been around since almost the beginning, right? And she was saying, like, and this older vampire, she said, like, you don't understand something. She said, this is just the constant human belief. There are gods, right? She said, gods are real. Energy said, real. But the problem is the gods never come. Like you said, you have all these people talking about God coming back. I mean, God never comes. They never come back. They never come to save humanity. They never come to interfere. I mean, the gods never come.
Well, no, wait, hold on here. There's been a lot of like weird shit that happened in history that looks like an intervention, you know, going back to Alexander the Great or Foo Fighters in World War II. There's been some weird stuff.
No, she meant in the sense of they're not coming to save us. Like, you have to do all these grand religions, and they're coming to save humanity, you know, and make everything ethical. They never come enough. If the gods are just as forced to just do their own things, that's Greek mythology right there. The gods had their own agendas. They treated us like puppets. Like, people don't realize, man, the gods started the fucking Trojan War, dude. Fucking with humans.
Indeed.
You have Paris was minding his own fucking business. The main goddesses got into an argument of who was the prettiest goddess, right? They asked the gods, right? The male gods, like, fuck that shit. We already know where this is going. We're not answering that question. Why don't you go fuck with the humans, right?
That's hilarious, by the way. We're not answering that question. We know the trick here. Y'all can go and find your answers elsewhere.
You go fuck with the humans, right? So what they do? They see Paris, right? He's minding his own fucking business in Troy. Young prince. They go and fuck with him, right? So they say, hey, you're going to judge this beauty contest, right? And they all try to bribe him, right? Artemis tells him, you know, that he'll be a master to hunt. You know, perfect arrows, man. You know, just never go hungry. Athena says she'll give him wisdom. She's the goddess of war, right? So she'll give him wisdom, and he'll never lose a fucking battle, right? And then Aphrodite, you know, and it goes, and they're really making a joke on mankind, right? How we're controlled by our lust and our eyes. Yeah, Aphrodite's promising the prettiest woman in the world, right? Whose pussy is so good that if you throw it in the air, it'll turn into sunshine, right?
Venusian pussy.
Yeah, so he turned on all that shit that would have gave him skills that would have naturally got him a lot of pussy, right? Because he's short-sighted and he's thinking with his dickhead, right? So he chooses to have the beautiful, the prettiest woman in the world. Just so happens, she's the queen of fucking Sparta, one of the fucking deadly warrior nations in the fucking known world at the time.
People you don't want to fuck with.
This big-ass fucked-up war.
Yeah, people you do not want to fuck with.
Exactly. And it triggers this big fucked-up war, but the gods started it, fucking with humans.
Yeah, that's, for all we know, that could still be going on today.
I think it is. I think they have a very cruel sense of humor.
I mean, okay, this is like one of history's mysteries. At what point did some of these gods become Chthonic underworld deities? Or at what point did they become demonic? Was it the church? Because a lot of these so-called gods are now worshipped as demons. Whether they are or aren't, it's really hard to say. Or why some of these gods are involved in destruction now.
That's easy to answer. You know why, right?
I have no clue.
Because every state has a god, right? So in the United States, we have a Christian god, right? And he's a jealous god, right? And you're not supposed to have any gods before you, right? And like one's religion is also attached to one's political perspective, right? So when you have different gods, right, not only do you have people competing with the dominant force that everyone's supposed to worship, you also have people creating their own political systems that might challenge yours or might get enough power and influence that they overthrow your state and your god. Yeah. That's why they become demons.
That's also why they become pantheons.
Yeah. It's just gatekeeping. It's a form of spiritual gatekeeping. It's a form of spiritual and political gatekeeping. If you control, because religion is what man believe and think. That's what I'm trying to tell you right now. Religion makes motherfuckers go off and kill people. You got coming from? Think about like the Crusades and all that shit, right? That's already a powerful motivating force, right? So you want to control the dominant motivating force, right? Which is the religious belief system, right?
Yeah, it's all about manipulating
beliefs. Exactly. And you can't have competing religious belief systems, right?
Yeah, there's a theory that every god was actually a human at one point, that perhaps they performed a few miracles and they were deified as God, and this whatever nation or village might have just had one god, but in order to get along with the neighboring nation or village, they had to turn their gods into brothers and create a pantheon, so it would all make sense.
But now, it's simpler than that, man. We do it now, dude, with celebrities. I'm telling you, man, just like little gods. Sometimes they sexually abuse them, but it's a lot of girls. Man, they could just pick up girls right there and get everything they want from these girls, even girls that have boyfriends and shit like that. That's almost like a godlike ability.
Yeah. But it's important to, the reason I'm a Christian is because my God has always advertised himself, has always claimed to be the father of all gods and to basically be the God of gods. And if daddy's telling you one thing and his sons are telling you another thing, I'm going to listen to daddy because he's the oldest and he's the wisest.
Yeah. It's just a better mousetrap, right? Maybe. No, because you have some people, because like at one point in time, like people didn't really trip off other people's religious beliefs like we do now, right? Like, I mean, like Rome, they would conquer nations, still let you have your gods and everything, right?
That was back then, like all the gods kind of matched up too. Like you could say Zeus was whoever's the head of the pantheon over here.
No, definitely. But what I'm saying is, so what you have basically, you have one group of priests, right, who built what I would like to call a better mousetrap. Because remember, these are ideas, right? And ideas improve. And some ideas are stronger than others, right? That's what Nietzsche talks about, right? It's just basically a dialectic, right? Like, that's will to power, right? That's what he means. Like, everything's, you have all these ideas kind of starting off at one time, right? But like sperm cells, right? They compete with one another. They kill each other off. And only one gets an opportunity to fertilize the egg and become something big, right?
That's the beginning of will to power. I remember that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's basically what he said. That's what all ideas are.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like some, you know, like I give you an example, right? It's on a lower level, right? You know Barbie, right? The doll.
Yeah.
Like she had competition at one point, right? And it was kicking Barbie's ass. I think it was called like glitter or get with a sparkle or something like that, right? But they just didn't have like the longevity and the staying power of Barbie. And Barbie just, it was just a war of attrition. And eventually Barbie won, just to make a long story short. But that's just how ideas are.
Stuff like that. It's usually just one little change, and somehow somebody they change one element of the product, and it ends up.
And you have like the perfect salesman. Somebody can just say the right pitch. That's how ideas are. That's how religious systems are. All ideas, they compete just like anything else. That's what the meme is. Means compete for survival. Belief system compete for, just like we do, right? If you have white people, you have a concept of white, right? And you want to protect that concept, right? Then you build an ideology called white supremacy, right? And it's like, it's one of the better ideologies that a group of people made, right? Because of its longevity and because of its ability to make sure that its group stays on top, right? That's a better mousetrap.
One incredibly dangerous poison, I call it poison or a disease, is when you mix race with spirituality, because then that's when you get into the Nazi ideology, et cetera, chosen people, bloodline.
And that's what Christianity is, right? One God, right? Nobody have a God before me, right? Don't worship anybody else, right?
The difference is, in Christianity, anybody can be saved. That's the appeal. It's for everybody.
Anybody can save who believes in this religion and follows his religion. See, there's always a catch.
You just have to accept Jesus.
That's any religion. All religions are the same way. You can be saved anyway. They just don't call it saved. You start worshiping Shango, or you start worshiping Hera, and you're a follower of Zeus, and you do what Zeus says, and you bring Zeus offering. Logically, Zeus is going to protect you, right?
and see, this is where we get into why the Bible outlaws idolatry. It's so that you think about God and the difference between the God that has an idol and the God that does not have an idol.
But you could say, but you could argue that Christianity is an idol too. It's just an idol of words, right? Let me explain what I'm saying though, so you get it. And it's not a challenge to you. I'm just giving you a different perspective.
Respond though too.
I'm sorry, Dad, to let you go.
No. I'm saying after you say what you.
Definitely. Words can be idols too, right? This was saying, like, in order for you to able to copyright something, right? Like, you can't copyright an idea, right? That's impossible, right? It has to be in what they call fixed original expression, right? You actually have to take it outside your head and create a tangible model of it that people can see and feel. So you can't just have an idea, say like a movie called Belt, right? You actually have to have a script, right? That has the title Belt, that has like, you know, people can see it. It has a model. It's tangible. You can hold it in your hand, right? So when you have a Bible, right, and you have these stories, right, that tell a tale about Christ, right, that tale in and of itself is a form of idolatry. It's an idol.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same concept. It's just not a stone, but it's an idol of words compressed in a book that gives you a concise, fixed image of what you think God is. It could be called an idol.
Sure. What I would say to that is that the reason why you got to get rid of the idols and smash them, if you're familiar with Elijah was a great smasher of idols and actually ordered a lot of people to be killed. I'm not sure how I feel about that, but Elijah was considered one of the great prophets, and all these people were worshiping Asherah, Bell, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason why idols are bad is that God is something that's very real, and God is a part of us. And God is actually something that you can sense within you and tune in with, you know, within your own mind and within your own spirit. And that's the real God. If something needs an idol or needs you to bow down to it or sacrifice goats to it or give your own blood, you know, sacrifice babies to things like that, then it's not the real approachable God that makes up our own consciousness, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But can you say this, but can't you say the same thing about the Bible though? Like the Bible, you have this concrete thing, right? That you subscribe to as your belief system, right? And then you sacrifice certain aspects of your life, right, to be attuned with this ideology, right? So at one point, right, where I can enjoy my life because life is short, right? I see a girl, I can fuck her, fuck as many girls as I want. The Bible says I can't do that, right? So now that's a sacrifice, right? I'm sacrificing my time, my life, and my enjoyment for a religious belief, right? And that's very much the same thing. And I tell you why, I give you an example. There are some people, right, who like kind of like separated from Scientology, right? And Scientology is like a sick ass religion. I don't mean sick in the sense of like, I mean like just how controlling it is, right?
Like cool sick, like that sick.
Yeah. I mean, sick
in the head.
Yeah, like control. Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, like, you know, like you wear like these captain uniforms. You know, you got to wake up early in the morning. You got to do this. You got to give them all your money, all your time. You know, you can't date. You can't do anything. And when they get out, they realize all of just these little things that you would enjoy in life, just being a living person, like having a girlfriend, dating a lot of people, maybe accidentally getting a girl pregnant, smoke weed. You sacrifice all these things for this belief, and then it might not be true. Let's just say the Bible isn't true, right? And you had a time where it was this girl and you really liked her and she was really into you. And, you know, she was going to give you sex this night, but you turned it down because you were believing in God and you didn't want to anger God. So you missed out on that. And you could have a very pleasurable experience, maybe had a girlfriend, had a child, but you lost out on that for a belief system that isn't real.
Well, okay, I see your point here, but what comes of this free love, broken families, women that have to raise children on their own, guys that are sociopaths and just want to, you know, bed women, and that makes women hate them.
But that you don't need religion to do. Like you had Hammurabi's code. Some people say that's the Ten Commandments is a carbon copy of that.
Well, like that gets into why God needs to come back, because we have literally drifted from His commandments to have a wife, to have a family, to take care of your family, into a world of narcissistic pleasure.
What if I argue you shouldn't need God to believe in those things? See, and that's what Kant talks about. Because you don't need God to look at that from a rational perspective and say, as human beings, that's the best way we can live our life. It's better to have a man have one wife so he can satisfy his lust and at least get some like sexual pleasure, you know, and then we have agreements in society, social contracts that we agree not to mess with married people. That's why we have rings and shit on our finger. Like we can do that without having a God. It just takes human discipline. Right. So some people, and that's what Nietzsche was arguing too, that like the belief in God sometimes de-empowers human beings because you have all these things inside yourself. And now you're projecting these natural qualities you have into yourself and you're projecting onto a God when you can get these things from the virtue of just human reason and human discipline and understanding that this is the best way that a society should function so you don't have chaos. You don't, but the only reason why they have God, basically, God is there as that invisible policeman.
Let me jump in there real quick. And I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but let me jump in. So if we have a spiritual policeman, we also have spiritual bad guys. We have what are called demons, which we both agree exist. And the seven deadly sins are all demons, right? Lust is one of the most dangerous demons of them all. And lust can get you in a lot of trouble. It's gotten me in trouble, you know, whether it's getting caught with some pornography or catching a disease or getting a lady pregnant, which luckily hasn't happened to me, not because I'm super religious, probably because I'm a fat dork. I don't know. But I'm just kidding. But, you know what I'm saying? Like, for a person to, we only live once, right? We only have so many years that we live. And you could spend that time creating a family, having children, treating all of them right. Or you could spend that time like womanizing, hurting women left and right. Like during my brief period where I was sort of like trying to be this big player or ladies man or pickup artist or whatever you want to call it, I hurt like 3 females' feelings in a row, which probably fucked me up more than it fucked them up. And I told myself, I'm done with this. This is not the way. Womanizing, I feel terrible.
But you don't need a God to make you act like that, though, because there's a lot of atheists that have those same principles who don't believe in God at all. Like, I know a lot of atheists that act better than a lot of Christians. Like, I know a lot of atheists are more moral, more ethical than a lot of Christians I meet, because that God can also become a crutch. It's a double-edged sword. Like why do you think the mobs like to be Catholic, right? They kill a lot of people and all they got to do is go to the priest and ask for forgiveness and they're forgiven. It's just a very, and that's another people say about it's too easy to be forgiven. That's the problem in Christianity too. So people don't work hard to be good people.
Yeah, but the thing is, okay, let's imagine that We have this guy here that's a child molester, right? And he's molesting these children. Is he damned, or is it better if he knows that he may have done these awful things, but there is still that small sliver of hope for him to get back on the right path? If that makes sense.
I would never say a man is damned, but I'm talking about from a more practical perspective. Like, you can't just let bodies go around harming anybody, right? So either way, we have to stop that body. You got coming from? It doesn't have anything to do with religion, right?
Sure.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Like, that's me. Like it's more of a crutch or opiate. Like, if you're a good person, you shouldn't need a God to validate that, right? Like, I'm very spiritual, right? I don't believe in a personal God. I believe more in the energy or force, basically. But I don't need God to know that if I say something to a woman and make her a promise, right? And then that promise results in me having sex with her and being able to benefit from her body. And then I don't keep that promise and I hurt her feelings, dude. I can empathize with her enough to know I hurt her feelings, right? And that's a bad thing. I don't need God to tell me that's bad. I know murder is bad, right? Because when you lose a loved one, right? You know how bad that hurts you, right? You know how bad you miss that person, right? You don't need to tell me that if I was to sit here and artificially just walk up somebody and take somebody else's life that have a family and people that care for them, that's not going to hurt them, right? I don't need God to tell me that.
But the thing is, when I lose people, whether it be pets or friends or family, it does comfort me knowing that they are going to heaven.
Oh, no. Yeah, definitely. Our comforts you with the belief that you believe you might see them again, you know.
And I do believe that.
Yeah, you know, that's good. I don't think that's wrong. I think there's truth in that. I'm not arguing, but I'm saying just from a different perspective. Like I'm saying, though, like when you're talking about utility, like I'm saying we don't need God to be good persons. And Kierkegaard believes that, too. Like he believes it's an intentional, willful choice. Like, in order to be a true Christian, you have to be committed to the point to where you're intentional about it. It has nothing to do with like some spirit taking over you. It's because you decided that this is the path you want to walk and this is the best path for everybody else, that you're going to commit to it and walk that talk. And that's why I say faith is only as powerful as the human will. Faith is basically human beings willing themselves to do the right thing, but they're using this belief in God to take them over the finish line. But if you have a self-sustaining person, they don't need that. It's just their will. They decided that this is the best course of action and the best rational behavior that human beings that should engage in that keeps society safe. And as a social contract, if I don't want people to infringe upon my right to enjoy a good life, I shouldn't infringe upon their right to enjoy a good life. I don't need God to work that out for me. I can come to that on my own just by basically using reason and knowing that we as human beings have to get along and that in order for me to wipe my ass, I need somebody willing to make toilet paper. In order for me to write things, I need people to be willing to make pencils. I need people to move cars. Then we need teachers. And then in order to keep that society together, it's a certain code of conduct we have to agree to that we won't violate to keep society running properly. And you don't need God to punish you, because if you don't do those things, society's going to fall apart. Society's going to punish you.
See, this is a key issue right here. This is here. See, you just said something about God punishing people. But see, this is why people drift towards atheism or they drift towards other belief systems. Because, like, my truth is I don't believe in all this reincarnation stuff or anything like that. What the Bible says, man lives once, then he is judged. So much of human behavior and what you see going on in the world right now is people trying to escape that judgment that's going to come whether they like it or not. Everybody will be judged. Every man, woman, and child that exists will be judged at the end of their life. And a lot of people can't handle that.
And then, you know, that might be true. I'm not shitting on your belief or anything, but I'm saying like a lot of people become atheists because they don't see God punishing anybody. You ever think of that? Like, I don't know, a lot of people say, you know, that's really why. Like, it's more so that, like, if there is a God, why does he let bad shit to happen? We never say, like, I believe in God because there's good things. We say we don't believe in God because God let bad things happen. So a lot of people become atheists because they think God doesn't punish people enough.
The way I look at it is that we have, what, ultimately 120 years to live at the most, and there's only so much that could happen during that time period. A lot of people find a lot of these people, they act like they're going to live forever. Like these elite people, you know, they believe that they're going to come back, and maybe they do. Maybe they have some kind of occult secret where they could reincarnate themselves. I don't really know all that. I've seen evidence for it. but I don't really know.
That doesn't matter. What matters is the fact they believe that shit and they're doing shit that's harming people because of that belief. Whether or not it's true or not is incidental. What is true is that they're hurting people. That's all we care about. See, it's okay if you have belief if it doesn't hurt people. But if your belief involves child sacrifice and shit like that, whether it works or not is of no consequences. What matters is that we as society have to stop that shit. Because we can't allow your belief to result in hurting other people.
Well, this is a prime question, and it's a classic question. Why does God allow bad things to happen? And the reason why that is God is giving you a chance to prove yourself. You could either separate yourself from him and his ways, or you could basically rejoin him in the light as a free-thinking individual God baby, which even Christ will tell you that that's pretty much what we are. I know a lot of people want to get on me and say I'm a New Ager or I'm with Crowley because I'm saying that we're all gods, basically. But I'm not saying that. I'm saying we're baby gods. We're trying to earn
the our Bible right says to, that though, right? Ye all gods, ye all created in the image of the Most High. The Bible Christ does say that. It does say that. But I'm gonna say something else about that though. I lost my thought.
It's a tough discussion, and I'm kind of losing my trains of thought purely because.
No, but you're talking about like God. Just go back. You said God forgiving you.
We're over 2 hours, so we're gonna have to wrap.
I had a good thought. I was trying to get it back, but.
If you can try to drum it up real quick and give kind of a final thought on the debate or discussion, we should.
No. We were just having a discussion, but like. When you talk about God has to, we have to prove ourselves to God, what happened is, and this is famous in philosophy, you run into what they call the problem of evil, right? That's an age-old philosophical question, right? And what it does is it challenges what we like to refer to as the anatomy of a God, basically. So we'll take the anatomy of a Christian God, right? It's like omnipresent, right? Meaning he's everywhere, right? Omnipotent, right? All powerful and all knowing, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have to prove yourself to God because God knows what you're going to do anyway, right? It's impossible even thinking you can prove something to him. It is a ridiculous or absurd statement because he knows what you're going to be regardless of what you try to do anyway, right? So that raises the problem of evil, right? So if God is all powerful, right? And God is all loving, right? And God is all knowing, right? Why would God create you knowing you're going to go to hell, right? Or if God is all powerful, right? What if God can't stop you from going to hell, right? So either God can't prevent you from going to hell, which means he's not all powerful, or God doesn't give a fuck. And he's gonna let you burn in hell, you know, knowing that when he creates you, you're damned anyway. You're gonna live a dark life and go to hell. So why would a loving God create you, knowing you're gonna go through all this pain?
Because even though there are predefined paths, it's like a choose your own adventure. God has laid out a board for you, a game, and you could go down path A or path B. He doesn't know what path you're going to go down, but he knows every possibility.
No, he does. He does. But that's what that means, though. Because I'm going off what you say God is. If God is all-knowing, there's nothing he can't know. That's what that means.
But he might be all-knowing, but we also have free will.
But you're going back to this. It goes back to this old ancient philosophical riddle, right? And I don't want you to do nothing. I'm just saying what people are saying. I don't believe any of this shit. I just think it's words. But
you're fine. That's what we're
here
for.
It's that old like philosophical rhythm. If God is all powerful, can God create a rock that he himself can't lift? That's basically what you're saying. God kind of surrenders his power. So he's all knowing, but he constantly chooses to be stupid, right? And he kind of turns off his awareness of your path. So you can have free will and make an honest choice that he won't know about.
See, that's why he's absent, because he's allowing us to choose.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, but hey, no, we're running kind of long here, so
no way. Yeah, it's just a logical problem, man. But no, this was an excellent conversation, man. It was nice.
We'll continue it next time.
No worries, man. I loved it, man.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of people liked what we had to say. But hey, go ahead and hop up on the soapbox and just plug anything, talk about whatever you want to. Just go ahead and give your last words and some plugs and stuff.
Oh yeah, hold on a second. Something I do want to share with the people, man. My name's Dr. Robert, right? And I'm coming up with my own podcast. It'll be around soon. It's still Deep Dive Dialogues with Dr. Robert, but I'm creating a special series called The Pressure Chamber, basically. And The Pressure Chamber basically is going to focus on heavily on stories and stereotypes, historical distortions, and psychological framings used to contain Black and Afro-Latino men politically, socially, culturally, and economically. So I'll be reviewing like all the things in our society, all the belief systems, all the narratives that kind of act like cages that chain our ability to see Black and Afro-Latino in a very positive light that allows students to thrive in society without any resistance, basically. So if you guys get a chance, I'd love for you guys to check that out. And maybe next time when I'm on Danny's show, I can give you my all the social media platforms I'm on, so you guys can follow me and like my stuff, or you know, talk shit about me, whatever you guys want to do. But it's going to be a fun experience. I think you guys will really enjoy it. I'm doing something really, really different and innovative. But that's about it, man. And thank you, Danny, for the opportunity always.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to that podcast. Definitely get me on there. We'll come up with something
special. Oh, yeah, I want to talk to someone about you, man. I think you'll like it. I got a good thing for us.
Awesome. All right, Dr. Robert, really thank you for joining me on the program. I'm sure a lot of people will have loved to hear from you again. And everybody check out the upcoming Deep Dive Dialogues podcast with Dr. Robert, something I've personally been waiting for quite a long time. I look forward to listening while I'm at work or doing my workouts and stuff like that. So thank you, Dr. Robert.
I have a question real quick. Are you still on X? Are you still filming this on X like you used to?
Still on everything. Facebook, YouTube, X,
BitChute. So this is live on X right now?
We are live.
Oh, wow. Groovy, man. Hi, X family. Yeah, I'll be doing something similar soon.
Yeah, definitely. We'll make sure that you're on all the same stuff and got everything working good.
All right. Catch you later, brother. Love you.
All right. Thanks. All right. There you have it. That was a great discussion with Dr. Robert. You know, we kept it kind of light. Just had a Dr. Robert on, as well as some interaction from the chat. I really liked it. You know, I know a lot of you guys like the roundtable sort of discussions with lots of people, but it's really a lot more intimate when you just have, you know, two or three people on, one to three people. You tend to have a more linear discussion, which I really enjoy, rather than, you know, people constantly talking over each other and trying to get their point in, et cetera, et cetera. I really feel like this episode was a success. Messiah Isho, I hope I wasn't yapping too much. No, not at all. Thank you for your input. Definitely enjoyed what you contributed to the discussion, as well as everybody else that took part in the chat. We are coming off of a very long break, so I don't expect everything to be super active right now, which is totally fine. If you do what I did and take a long break for health reasons, you got to kind of work your way back and fight your way back into doing a weekly show again. And you know, one thing that you got to do with podcasting is you got to stay consistent. So I'm going to be on next week and the week after. I know sometimes I make promises I can't fulfill. Again, health reasons. I've talked about it ad nauseum. So yep. So Sai Isho, yeah, I take some breaks too. Social media is draining. That's part of it. A lot of it was just, you know, purely a health issue on my part, which I apologize for. I don't want anybody to think I abandoned you guys out there or anything like that. I'm still here, and this is just the beginning. I'm going to rededicate myself to podcasting. You know, we've got new artwork, new music, got a new camera, and I absolutely love doing this. It's exercising my brain. A lot of stuff that is part of my spiritual model comes from doing these shows. and it really helps you grow as a person and learn quite a bit. And, you know, shout out to all those people out there that, you know, have supported me out throughout the years. Many of them have shows of their own, you know. Give a big shout out to General Lee, the Subconscious Realms podcast, big shout out to Raven. You know, he was part of the chat earlier. Jin the Ninja, check out the Threshold Saints podcast, check out Raven Kiefer's podcast as well. Man, there's so many of them. The Occult Rejects, you know, all kinds of friends of the show. Stygian Charters, check that one out. And, of course, the Michael Deacon program, my old ex-host, one of my best buddies, Michael Deacon. I was actually just on his show yesterday, and I've made a couple appearances recently before then. So definitely check out the Michael Deacon program. There was a great episode where we talked to Robert Stanley, and I talked about a lot of that crazy demonic things I went through, which Robert Stanley was actually a part of. And we were able to kind of come together and put our heads together, and fantastic show, fantastic show. God, I love doing this so much. But other than that, just thank you, everybody. Remember to get the show wherever you get podcasts. We're on just about every platform. End of Days Radio, of course. I'm sure you know the name of the show. And check me out on Twitter, at Ninja Shoes. See you next week. But until then, this is Daniel, and I am signing out from those itty-gritty broken ruins of Seattle, because let's face it, this town's gone to shit with our wonderful new mayor, who's apparently never had a job. But I won't get into that. All the bantering is over with, so I'll see you guys next week. Let's hit that outro.
Days radio hissing through the rain, broken ruins of Babylon calling out my name, rust on the tower stairs, ash on every rung, late at night the signal cuts like a tongue unstrung. Bigfoot in the tree line, wolves at the gate, vampires on the highway, talking about my fate. Daniel in the dust, to look up and stand. Jesus at the window with fire. Circles in the mud, rusty old radio station, breathing out that blood. Bigfoot by the tower, footprints in the clay. Every lie I ever trusted, falling away. Broken bells are ringing. Dead of town, I heard one true voice, cut the thunder down. Daniel in the dark. nothing. If the whole damn world keeps dragging me back, I will not kneel to a shadow made of dust. I will not bow to a mouthful of rust. No more. Burn it down to nothing. No more false prophets. No more false prophets. When the night goes blind, we follow the sun.